other piece that we have is, the board to them is Bill 6. That's about it.
Can you check in one hour for the rich one?
And then on the side of the department, the engineers and apologies. And the wisdom. I think there's further any apologies, and they were told that we were going to leave the delegation. I think that all the other officials are there, and that we have to do this. So welcome again to the delegation from the department, and without further ado on the agenda, let's hand over Dr. Murphy to lead us for this delegation of us.
Good morning, and good morning to all of you. Once again, apologies to the director general. I have many other commitments to be able. Could I ask my team members to introduce themselves to you, or are they known? They are known.
None of them are. I don't see any of your faces. Kambala was very shocked that he must be.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm a regular.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that. So, you have a written presentation in front of you, and there's one coming up on the screen as well. As you are aware, this is our progress report to the Portfolio Committee. This is a report to the Portfolio Committee on the progress we have made towards our first quarter APP, on the performance, our performance against the milestones and targets in the first quarter APP. Our presentation includes the background information and the performance per program. So, as you're aware, our programs relate to university education, TVET colleges, skills development, and community education and training sector. And then the two support programs in the department are the planning branch and the administration branch. And then the last section will be on the financial performance of the department in the first quarter. So, you might recall that the 2018-19 annual performance plan of the DHET had a total of 110 targets. And of these 110 targets, 75 pertain to direct outputs of the department, which means that 75 of the targets are directly under the control of the department, while 35 of the targets relate to the performance of the system as a whole, the DHET including the rest of the system. For this quarter, for the first quarter, we've had 21 milestones, and we are pleased to say that all of the milestones we met. And our quarter focuses mainly on oversight and reports, this particular quarter. It focuses mainly on that. And it deals with things like institutional governance of colleges, TVET, CET, and CETA, infrastructure and development at maintenance at TVET colleges, the eradication of the certification of TVET college students, the academic performance of students, and the conduct of TVET college examination centers. So consequently, the presentation picks up on the key monitoring reports that were the output of the first quarter. And the university education grant does not have any specific deliverables for this quarter, but they will talk about other things that are of interest to the public, especially in general. Each branch will report on their own. Now, I know that the chairperson has asked about the targets that they not achieved in the last financial year, 2017-18. Those targets will be mentioned by each of the branch reports. However, formally, they will be reported when we report on the annual report for mostly for our report purposes. Okay. Yeah. But they will be reported on here as well. Okay. Each of the branches will report on that. We may start with the university branch too. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members. As Dr. Nash has indicated, there are no specific targets for the branch for the first quarter of the year. The reason for this is the majority of the targets are linked to reports that are our oversight in terms of our earmark grants, and we only receive the audit reports from universities at the end of May each year, which requires quite a lot of going backwards and forwards between universities themselves, so it's not quite possible to have those targets in place in the first quarter. However, I have been asked to reflect on the fourth quarter targets, and particularly those fourth quarter targets which were not achieved. There were two targets that were not achieved. The one was the finalisation of the National Plan for Post-School Education and Training. In relation to that, a draft plan was for consultation was finalised by the end of October 2017, and we have held consultative meetings across the system with the various stakeholders on that draft plan. However, there were two things that made it very difficult to finalise the plan. The one was the uncertainty around the outcomes of the Queen's Commission, and the second, of course, was we had changes in ministry, and we needed to get direction from the ministry in terms of some of the key policy decisions in the plan. I do believe that that we have been requested to do a presentation for next week, I think, to the Portfolio Commission on the plan. So we'll be able to give you a full update then in terms of where we are. The second one was the policy on collaboration between professional bodies, government departments and quality councils. This particular piece of policy was intended to assist with unblocking blockages for the production of professionals and paraprofessionals, if you like, in the system. We have difficulties between the accreditation bodies, the professional council, government departments, all having different things, and we needed to develop a framework around that. A draft was developed by June last year through the EU dialogue process, but we did have a huge hiccup from two points of view. The chief director who was leading that process, Dr. Fonsani, left the department. And as you know, we need a driver of a process to make it happen. And then the second one was a legal issue around who has the right to do a policy on this kind of thing, and whether it or not it is something that the department could do. So it's had to go back through another process to really think through what kind of framework it is. And it looks as if it needs to be a framework or protocol for how we cooperate together rather than policy. So we're currently working with the Council on Higher Education, the department, the professional bodies, and so on, to finalise that particular framework. And we do hope that we'll be able to publish it by the end of the year. And I think also just in terms of the national plan, just to indicate that we are currently doing another draft, and we do also hope to publish that by the end of the year. Thank you very much.
The next one, Dr. Martin, the College Branch, Program 4, GDBU.
acting DG Magnus. if we look
for acting DG.
No. Just quickly to reflect, the purpose of the TVET branch is to plan, develop, implement and monitor policies around assessment practices, programs and assessment practices for TVET. Annual targets, we have 25 this year, quite a lot, although most of them are around monitoring and oversight, and specifically in the areas of examination, infrastructure, and in TV college sector. So for this particular quarter, we've had 9 oversight targets. 3 of them are around exams, and 6 of them are mostly around infrastructure and in safety. So if we then look at the first 3, which is around exams, the first report there is the backlog report. I also know that there was a meeting last week, and perhaps if the committee wants, I can also give the latest figures and updates, as of now. But I'll leave that for the question session if we want to go there. So outstanding certificates.
If you have it ready now,
shall I do that? Okay. I do have it ready for now. So this is at the 6th of August. The report that we have from CICA, which is the State Information Agency, is that the total number of NCB certificates, so this is ranging from 2007 to 2017, is 473 NCB certificates. For the current year, so the exam written at the end of last year, 2017-11, and also the supplementary exam that was written in April, at the moment there is an amount of 31,436 certificates that are outstanding, but we don't consider them to be really a backlog. It's part of the supplementary process that was written in April that will now be concluded in August. So within this month, that should be dealt with. And so at least on the NCB side, I think there's no backlog that is building up. We are dealing with certificates as they come. And the 473 that remain outstanding, we are dealing with those. There are particular problems. I have a list of all of them, but we deal with them case by case. On the NATES, the situation is less rosy on the business study side. From 2002 to 2015-06, we are sitting with 1,381 students, so those are people IDs, that is a backlog. And on the engineering side, 3,786. So in total, that's about 5,000 that we know belong to a backlog that we are still dealing with. Then for the current cycle, on the business studies 2015 to 2017 and engineering studies 2015 to April 2018, those numbers are 10,962 and 11,692 respectively, but those are not IDs, those are subjects. Now the difficulty that we have with the IT system is drawing together of subjects per candidate. And that is a problem that we've had with the system all along. So I mean that's a total of more than 22,000, but those are not IDs, those are not people, those are those related subjects.
So if one considers that the student does two subjects, you know, it may mean that the people are roughly 5,000 or 6,000 that we are dealing with, you know, currently. And then of course also to say that a lot of them will be in process, there may be some irregularities and so on that one has to deal with. So I think, you know, I think we've come a long way with this, but certainly there is more work that remains, and we keep chipping away at those figures. Okay, if I can then perhaps move on. To
slide 7.
Yeah, that was slide 7. So if we can then perhaps move on to slide 8, if that would be okay. To say, and this is a progress report on the new exam cycle, or on the new exam system rather, not cycle, that we are busy developing. I think the committee knows that a service provider has been appointed. We are working quite eagerly with the service provider. It's broken up, our progress and milestones are broken up into a report. There's a phase 1A, phase 1B, and then a phase 2. Phase 1A, we have done mostly all of the factory acceptance testing, and we are now busy with user acceptance testing. That's going fairly well. I mean, as to be expected, we are picking up little bugs here and there, and that's a process that we're going through to fix those. Really the heart of the system is in phase 1B, which is resulting in certification. We are in advanced phase of completing that. Some of the factory acceptance testing has happened, and we are now about to move into a pilot phase with the module 1B, which as I said is really the heart of the system. We have had several engagements also with our counterparts from Umalusi QCDO, Home Affairs, to make sure that the specs as the system is designed now meet their requirements. And you know, they are also quite engaged with the process, making suggestions about where things could be tweaked from their side. So we're feeling pretty confident that the system is coming along nicely, stakeholders are involved, and yeah, we'll see in the final phase if it meets what we are looking for, but so far all indications are that it's on track and going well. Okay, then the remaining six reports really are around the infrastructure, of which the first report is about the new TVET colleges. So for the new ones that we are building, the project plans are complete, contracting has been completed, and as of late also all of those sites have been handed over. That's a process where the land is given to the contractor, and the contractor then starts work, and so you know all of those processes are on the go. In terms of the sites that have already been completed, Sabazumbe, Bambanani and Mkandla, we've also managed to secure operational budgets for those colleges that will become effective as of 2019. So those are on the new build. On then, on the maintenance, first of all, there's a component on asset management. We've held workshops on the development of a national asset database. Per our Act, it is a requirement of the Director General to have an asset register of all colleges, and you know, so our database can set up, colleges understand how to do it. We have an inspection tool that we've developed for the bulk and essential services, and also then how to collect data. And this survey is currently underway, and the outcomes of the survey would be then to also influence the maintenance plans that need to be developed by colleges. So that's in as far as the asset management. We also have national infrastructure asset management maintenance standards that we developed as part of this process, and that basically then prescribes the standards that the colleges need to comply with. So, you know, it basically
I mean, it sets the standard as to what should be done, what the building should be like, and so on. And then the college plan for 2018 and 19 will firstly focus on preventative maintenance, but also for us important that all the health and safety issues must be accommodated first. You know, we have to look at making sure that our buildings are safe for our students. All right. Then I'm still more on infrastructure. Currently, colleges are being trained to complete their maintenance plan. Now in quarter two, I can report that all of that training has in fact been done. And colleges are now in the process of taking those maintenance plans and creating budgets and costing against those plans. And in fact, all of the maintenance plans have already been received by the department, and the department is now in the process of working through those plans and giving certain approvals for the plan. So I mean, that has been quite a process. We really have to train colleges to take them through the process, how to do this, how to use the standards, in terms of them developing that plan, and we're hoping that as we work through them now that most of them will comply to those standards. Where they don't, of course, you know, there will be a process of correcting plans. Okay, then the final report is one on SafeSet and its progress. For now, the bulk of the work in SafeSet has really revolved around lecturer development. A lecturer development strategy has been set up, and also a research document analysis done on a potential framework for a CPD system, continuing professional development system, which we actually are really quite excited about and hope that it would sort of move towards implementation early in next year if all the approvals are granted. And then I see we have a slide that's slightly misplaced. It should have been with exams. The third of the exam reports, which is the report around issuing of certificates within a 3-month period. And at the moment, we believe that we are meeting that. In our last AG report, the closing at the end of last year, we actually found that it was 3 months and 4 days. So we didn't quite miss it, but we believe that we are in the 3 month period for issuing certificates. And also, let me say that is from the time where the certificate is finally approved by UMLUC and is then dispatched. So one mustn't confuse the backlog of certificates. Of course, there are processes, internal processes that need to be sorted out, candidate subject links, etc. We don't count that as part of the 3 months. The 3 months we count from the point where UMLUC finally then agrees and the certificate goes into process and is dispatched. So that's on the certification cycle. And then finally on the conduct of examinations, exam centers have been found to be in compliance with national policy, and those checks have been carried out. We normally want to do a 100% check. Not that the DHET checks each and every centre, but we have a structure that also works with our principals to make sure that the centres are checked. And all centres were found to be compliant with the policy, and there were minor irregularities observed, and those are fixed and dealt with as they come, but nothing significant to report. And I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next is Program 5, Skill Development, Mr. Mbalo.
Thanks very much, Doc. Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues, my alpha slide will be slide number 12. The purpose of the program is to promote and monitor the implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy, develop a skills development policy and regulatory framework for an effective skills development. For the year under review, we'll be having 8 targets, and our areas of focus will be, amongst others, oversight on skills development, efficiencies in artisanal trade testing, success in artisan development measured especially through the pass rate, information management system for artisan development. For the court under review, we've had 3 targets, of which we've done quite very well in all these targets. Firstly, the report on the implementation of the NSDS 3, so the report was completed and done. So I must just explain, Chairperson, this is not in relation to NSDP. I know the Chairperson has already invited us to come and do a presentation next week on the NSDP. This is on the NSDS 3. Targeting an average of 80 days to process qualifying trade test application for trade testing. Also in that area, we're doing quite very well, as we are on average of 42 days to process applications from the receipt up until the trade testing is conducted. And we are likely going to maintain this data, if not improving further going forward. On slide number 15, development of a single national information management system for artisan development. This, I must say, is going to be a major breakthrough as well with regard to artisan development in the country, as we have never had such a system before. So the work is underway. A business case for data load specification has been developed as a first step of system development process as planned, so that has been completed. The design of the database is under construction. The automated artisan trade test system will greatly contribute, amongst others, to a standardization of trade testing for all trades and improve quality, of course. Accelerated certification process, creation of a data bank of artisan information in the country. So if we look at this target, is going to haunt us, this one relating to pass rate. We have not met in the year that has passed, and we are not meeting it as well in this quarter, and we are not likely going to meet. Perhaps maybe it's one of those targets that are not that much smart, because for trade testing, you normally meet with your candidates at the date of trade testing, as well as when they've enrolled for trade testing. So the target there was 61, so the achievement stands at 57% currently for the quota that is under review. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the program, as indicated, is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, maintain, and evaluate national policy programs, assessment practices, and systems for community education and training. The annual targets for the branch, it's basically 6 oversight reports. Areas of focus is oversight on the following: governance, CET colleges, teaching and learning, CET sector performance, infrastructure maintenance, and there's one which is missing on the presentation, which is monitoring the implementation of the strategy for forging partnerships. For the quarter under review, one oversight report was due for completion. The report on CET college performance for 2017 academic year was completed. And the report largely deals with the following areas. The reports on 394 Community Learning Centers which were visited. The report focused on the following: education, training and development, where we look at the quality of teaching and learning and lecturer development as well as student performance. Funding and financing, it's monitoring of the how we implement the current funding regime and then the financial performance of the programs as well as the institutions themselves. With regard to planning, institutional development and support, we look at the infrastructure and governance matters. On slide 18, we look at the implementation of governance policies and community education and training curriculum is monitored on a quarterly basis. This is done to prepare for the planned annual report on the CET governance. During the first quarter, the branch issued a circular to determine the extent to which colleges are implementing the 29 policies that were developed by the department. Only 8 out of 9 colleges confirmed their implementation status, with the exception of the Western Cape, on which we are making a follow-up. A quarterly report in this regard has been compiled. Other significant achievement during the first quarter, at the end of the last financial year, we ran induction courses for management and councils. And during the first quarter of this financial year, we then subjected councils and management and student leadership in CET colleges to specialized leadership development programs for which we got funding from the EU. And we have also rolled out a capacity building for CET College, particularly with regard to supply chain, finance, BM business management system, and infrastructure and HR. Those work streams have started the work, and the support financial advisors are in the process of being appointed in order to support CET College to be able to receive their own funding. We are targeting the beginning of first April 2019, if the progress is on course. Thank you very much.
Sorry, before we go to the next one, can I ask the honourable members, we have asked a further update on the CET, complicated now, before we go to the next round. Remember the issue, asking to come back again. So do we need the link here, the report?
Yeah.
We actually planned that we conclude the performance once we have concluded this first quarter. We take that immediately after the performance report.
All right. I tried to save you, but. Okay. That's the next one. The planning branch, program 2, slide 20. And as slide 20 indicates, we have a total of 11 targets for this year. And our focus in the planning branch is on open learning, the national qualification framework, social inclusion, career development services, international relations, planning, information management systems and services. For this quarter, we produced 6 monitoring reports in preparation for the annual reports that are targeted in our APC.
for open learning in PSET, the development of open learning materials is in progress for the National Occupational Certificate for Electrician, National Senior Certificate for Adults, NASA, and the Advanced Diploma for PSET College Lecturer. So these open materials would be in any format. They would be mainly on the electronic format. The department has appointed CETA, FITA, to develop the National Open Learning System on which these open materials will be printed. With regards to recognition of current learners, we are in the process of establishing a reference group that would deal with this matter. RCR workshops were held with a wide range of stakeholders, and we received a lot of cases with regards to our RCR. And a register to recognize RCR providers has been established. And that's in line with the RCR policy. With regards to career development services, we have the following activities. The CETA radio program, which deals well to our client now and other CETA information, was broadcast by 13 radio stations in all 11 languages. We had the annual career stakeholder conference on the 28th, 29th of June, and that was the conference at which all career stakeholders got together, shared information about careers, both on the existing knowledge on new developments in the career. The Career Health website, which is actually a very advanced website for South Africa, a very excellent website about information on occupations and the pathway from qualifications to occupations, recorded 5,000 users per month. And the helpline that we have on careers is in operation and serves around 1,700 clients a month. With regards to international relations, we had key meetings. There was a meeting between the Minister and the High Commissioner of Pakistan in June. There was a meeting between the Minister and the New Zealand High Commissioner in May. And what's not listed here is that we did have a SADC meeting in Durban, the SADC Education and Regional Education. And we did a lot of preparation for BRICS and the G20 meeting. And we'll get a report of those two at the next quarter. Then on the slide 23, with regards to information about labor market intelligence and the intelligence about school supply and demand, we produce a report on school supply and demand every 2 years, and we will be producing this particular report in this financial year. And during this first quarter, we finalize the structure, the tables and graphs, and develop the first draft of the report as planned. And then the report on statistics on PSET, as you know, that this is a report we produce annually, and this particular report gives statistics on enrollment, completion, finance, system, and so on. And in the first quarter, we are on track with the report, in preparation of the report, we've got a project plan, and so on. And we meet with the portfolio committee a report on any challenges we might be seeing on the way towards meeting the annual. And thank you very much.
Administration has a call for your voting.
Thank you, sir. The purpose of the program is preparing honorable members is to provide support with leadership, management, and support services to the entire department. We have a total number of 10 projects for the year 2018-19. And in this quarter, we focus on the healing of standard day cases, the management of disciplinary cases, ICT, payment of invoices, and the management of audit findings. For the quarter under review, the focus was on the, in terms of the now ATP project, the focus was on the implementation of ICT governance in the department, corporate governance in the department. And the target was achieved in respect to that. We also achieved the alignment of the ICT strategy with the, you know, with the ICT corporate governance framework. We are currently engaged in connecting all pivot sites that were not on the standard connectivity network. And this is one of our, I think, flagship projects in ensuring that we get, you know, quality connected. The next one is the automation of business processes. We are automating our submission processes, the workflow process for submission. We've automated our lease application. And that one is already working in the department, so these applications are online. And then supply chain activities in terms of the requisition orders and so on. So on those three, we've actually completed the development work as part of the automating our system. What is still outstanding there, Chairperson, is your performance management systems, but we are currently working also on that one, as well as the invoice checking system. That is the work that is currently doing. We hope that by automating all these processes, there will be efficiency and effectiveness in the department. We are also involved in the development of the new exam system. The FCBPT for TVET has already reported on that one. It is hoped that the system will be up and running next year. The last one, Chair, is the e-recruitment system. When we reported last year on how we intend improving our recruitment and selection processes, we did indicate that we are planning to implement an e-recruitment system. We finalized the terms of references. They were submitted and approved by the DG. However, we are experiencing delays here in that there is a national treasury moratorium on the development of new systems. So we are currently engaging national treasury so that they give the department a go-ahead to develop the system. But there is an integrated financial management system that is under development, which will have the modules, including the recruitment modules. Then in the fourth quarter, we had two targets that we were unable to achieve. We were requested to update the committee on that one. When we entered the order in respect to disciplinary cases, we were at 97% instead of 100%. And Chair, you will remember that this was an improvement from 22% in the previous year. So we moved to 97%. I just want to report that the cases that were pending in quarter four, there were around 22, and 13 of them have since been finalized. And for the first quarter, we are standing at 86.2%. We are putting measures in place to pursue so that by the end of the year 2019, we've actually achieved not below 97%. Either we go back to 97, but we're striving towards 100%. Already we are at 86%. The feeling of at the time post-chair, when we ended the year, we were at 188 days instead of 180 days. In quarter one, we stood at 181 days. So we were just short of 1 day to achieve the target of 180 days. And this year, we advertised 219 posts, and processes are underway to fill those posts. Already we filled 50 out of 219. Our vacancy rate is standing at 6.5%. That is when we close quarter four. Now here the target, the ADC target is 10%. So we've actually exceeded the target of that 10% target because we stood at 6.5%. Let me also report before I'm asked a question about the DDC vacancies. Yesterday, the minister interviewed for two DDCs, and the third one will be scheduled soon at chapter 2. The target is to get this post filled by September, the DDC post. And within the department, we also had, you know, a number of food director posts that were vacant. So far, out of 8, we filled 4, and we're in the process of filling 4. We've already had interviews in that respect. For principals, we filled 13 positions of principals in the quarter that we are reporting on. I can share a detailed report with the committee if there's an interest in the details for each and every college when it comes to principal posts, deputy principal posts, and campus manager. I have that report here. Then the last one is the payment of creditors within 30 days. That target we did not achieve yet. However, as part of the automation of our business processes, we have developed an invoice checking system, and it is currently being tested. But the CFO can, I think, elaborate on other strategies that he is putting in place to improve in this aspect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. On the finance side, the first slide is just once again a brief overview of the allocations for 2018-19. Just to remind Honourable Members that we have budget funds of 73 billion, the skills levy of 16.9 billion, giving us a total amount of 89.9 billion for the financial year. The distribution, as you can see there, with the biggest amounts linked to universities, 38 billion, NSFAS 20 billion, TVET colleges, just about 4 billion for the colleges in terms of the subsidization, and then also compensation of employees, relatively large, almost 9 billion, which is mainly for TVET and TET. I'm just rounding off the amounts are tied in million. I just rounded off. On the next slide, change slide number 29. If we look at the first quarter specifically, period from April to 30 June, we had a total of 34.7 billion rands worth of drawings. For this quarter, we spent 32.7 billion rand, and the underspending is an amount of 1.9 billion, which represents 5.8% of the amount drawn, compared to the treasury limit of 8%. So although we are within that limit, just an indication of the reasons for the underspending. First of all, in terms of the universities, there were a number of earmarked grants not yet transferred by the end of June, in total 1.2 billion rand. And the main reason for that being here that some of the allocations were not finalized, there were still plans and processes required from the universities that could not be completed on time. Many of those have in the meantime been transferred during July and some of them will be processed during August. So these are the specific ad hoc or earmark grants. It's not the normal block grant subsidy that goes to the universities. The second one then, Chair, is the capital grant transfers for TVET colleges. The original plan by the department was to transfer and disburse a total amount of 637 million by the end of June to the colleges with regard to the new capital transfer grant. Now, after deliberations between the branch, DG and the minister, a decision was taken to transfer this amount later. There were some additional exercises done to ensure that the correct amounts are transferred to colleges and that colleges actually have the capacity to utilize these funds effectively before we transfer. So that is in the process, and recently in the last 2 weeks the final submissions were approved and the transfers will be made to the TVET colleges. I must also indicate, Chair, that the first transfer that we are doing is slightly less than the 637 million based on the assessment performed by the relevant branch and the capacity of the various TVET colleges. The third one, Chair, compensation of employees, where there is quite a substantial underspending at this stage, approximately 97 million rand. This is mainly slow spending in terms of the unfilled vacancies, as already explained. But then secondly, Chair, we must also take into account that the final agreements on the salary increases were not finalized, and those funds were already withdrawn and transferred by Treasury to the department, but the payments would only go out later as soon as the agreements are signed, and that will mean that we will make back data payments to all staff. In addition to the examination cycle, certainly result in possible underspending at this stage. That is the reflection. However, we know that the majority of exam and moderation payments are taking place in the second half of the year, especially for the November exam. That is the biggest one, and therefore at this stage it's also showing a little bit of under expenditure. Lastly, Chair, the goods and services side of the department and equipment, some outstanding invoices and some commitments already entered into for which we must still get invoices, and therefore that underspending of 52 million on that side. Quite a substantial portion of this 52 million, Chair, is also regarding outstanding claims that we must receive from the State Information Technology Agency, as well as from the Department of Justice in terms of the work done by the State Attorney. And as soon as those have been received and verified, those payments can go out, and that will make also a substantial difference on this. The next slide, Chair, just a summary, and one can link this slide also to the last two slides where we show the status of expenditure per program as well as the status of expenditure per economic classification. University education, the third program, certainly remains the biggest spending program of the department. They are currently at 29.711 billion, and that is followed by TVET colleges, 2.261 billion. And thereafter CET colleges at 5 million. Transfer payments and compensation of employees also remain the two biggest spending items. Currently we transferred a total amount of 34.8 billion and we have compensation of employees spending of close to 2 billion rand. On transfer payments, I can also confirm that all the normal block grant subsidy payments to universities, to TVET colleges and to our other public entities are on schedule in terms of the approved transfer schedules. The various transfer payments are also listed there, Chair. You can see that universities already at 45% in line with the approved Treasury transfer payment schedule. our public entities are at almost 60%. Main reason for that being that the National Student Financial Aid Scheme receives quite a substantial amount at the beginning of the financial year to enable the management of the funds to students and to institutions. All the other entities are at 25%. The TVET College subsidy scheme is at 20%. Those are linked to what I explained in terms of the delayed transfer for the capital grant, and therefore that is not higher, but all the scheduled normal subsidy payments for TVET colleges were made. The same on the side of CET colleges, they received a little bit more at the beginning of the year, the first 3 months, and they are already at 46%. And then CSC Tower will receive their normal subsidy from the side of the department because of the low level of levy transfers. They receive their approved portion of 25% for the first 3 months. So Chair, the next two slides just tables reflecting the spending per program as well as for the economic classification. If we can just look at slide number 31 specifically, as I have not yet touched on that, the last row, number 7, direct charges, the skills levy to CETA as well as the NSF, you would see that to date approximately 4.2 billion has been transferred to the CETA and the skills levy, linked to the allocation of 16.9 billion. That is within the estimated levy collections, Chair. To date, the levy collections were 24.5%, and all the collections were transferred to the CETA as well as the National Skills Fund. So there's no balance in our books. That was the status as at 30 June. So, Chair, that is the information linked to the spending of the department as at 30 June for the first quarter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you, Chair. I've got a question under each section. Is that okay? As far as universities are concerned, you don't mention whether or not academics in the professional field are involved in your professional education consultation. I'm thinking of leading academics such as Eunice Ballum in the engineering field or others who have strong views on the role of professional bodies in accreditation. So I just wanted some sense of how involved they are. And then could you just clarify that something that isn't actually in your report but I've been wanting to get clarity on it. Are indebted students now getting relief from their debt? And is it all of them getting relief or only some? I'm sorry to impose a question like that, but it's not on your first quarter, but it is a way. On TVET, you talk about the revamp of your exam system, but I was wondering, do colleges have the skills in their colleges to manage a revamp exam system? Because from what I understood, it's not so much the system that's the problem, it's the college inadequacy in terms of skills. So do they have that, and will your exam system then flow easily because they have it? Is there money for the TVET infrastructure standards implementation? Because we all know that the department has wonderful norms and standards for accommodation on universities, but nobody has any money to actually implement them. So I'm just wondering what the point is of the norms and standards in TVET infrastructure if there isn't money. The CFO did mention $600 million, which he says he can't spend because the colleges don't have the ability to spend it. So it seems to me as though you might be devising a policy that can't really be actually ever implemented. But you, that's up to you to comment on that. And where in your targets does the upgrading of the curriculum fall? It doesn't seem to be in any of these targets, so I'm wondering where I may have missed that. As far as skills are concerned, it is a problem, the high failure rate in assessment of part of that. However, some people think high failure rates are a good sign because they're a sign of quality. They're a sign that the exam system is not just passing everybody because they feel like it, but they're actually setting a standard that is clearly a difficult one that has to be met. So I'm not particularly worried that there's a high failure rate. I think the concern then is, are people being allowed to sit the exam when they're not ready? And that's probably not fair on them. So maybe you could unpack that a little bit. From CET and the report that you've done on a survey of however many hundred CET colleges, can we have a copy of that report, please? Because we do seem to lack information skimming through your report now as well. I mean, it would be great to actually have your own report on what you found when you went to look at these colleges. Planning, and you're talking about open learning as one of your targets, which we've said was something we think is a good idea, but where would those people do their practical training? If you have an open learning course on how to be an electrician, you're going to have to match it with a practical course on how to be an electrician. And there's no sign that the open learning has a matching practical component that can actually teach someone how to be an electrician in practical terms rather than on paper. And we know that in the TVET, the biggest complaint of students is that all they learn is the theory and they never actually learn properly the hands-on stuff which would make them into a real electrician. And then on finance, I've asked a question about the link between the $600 million to TVET for infrastructure and the earlier stuff on infrastructure improvement. So it would be good if we could have more clarity on that. And then I've always wondered about the skills levy. Why, when you report on the skills levy, is it always treated differently from the rest of departmental funding? So when you talk about your departmental funding, you give us the details. This much went to universities, this much went to this track. But when it comes to the skills levy, it's just a big lump of money that goes somewhere. And I would appreciate it if your reports in future always said to us, well, where did that money go? How much went to the NSS? How much went to each CETA? So how much was sneaked into the department in order to pay for its shortfalls, as we have seen in earlier years? So it would be good if we could have that breakdown. Thank you.
The first question to Dr. Paga. Dr. Paga, just for the university, if we keep on hearing about backlog on certificates and the system making a problem that happened in yesterday with Melfast, why? You know, I can't really, I mean, we are the sector which must produce human resource capacity. And if we can even produce it for ourselves, and though for private sector, you know, we used to this, I've said that before, high standard of private sector banks, where you can transfer to other banks from one machine, your basic account, you can have other beneficiaries, telecom, Eskom, everybody does that. And you just press button and money just go wherever you want it to go and there's no problem. But when it comes to our own system in this sector, TVET, PayNelfast, producing certificates, it's such a big problem. Can we produce people, IT people, whether computer, master's, engineering,
or whatever is needed there to do this, I really cannot assess. That is, this is our specialty, and we can't do it for our own sake. What is then the problem? What are we producing in this university? Those private sector is using local people, and systems are working better than sitting in the that university. So I really, really can understand why we're always complaining about systems. Still things as a backlog. We can't just catch up, we can't just do things timelessly. And I'm sure if it was done by private sector, what is the problem? That's the first thing. The second thing we had yesterday is that the enrollment on TVET have gone down. And maybe the second TVET, the presenter can tell us why, because we think that 2030 will be producing 30,000 artisans every year. Now, if we're still struggling going down, why it is free to go there? I can't just understand now why this is happening. So the last question, you said that for vacancies, you come to principals and managers of colleges and you say the paper is there. I didn't hear whether you're saying you criticized there or not, because we need this principal for TVET. Somebody must do the work and lead and steer the ship. So I just wish you give us a report of those principals with those vacancies and managers are there or what is happening. I'm just saying, I'm not happy that you bring a paper and keep it to yourself. So give it to us. Let's hear what you say.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I want to start from the admin side. I want to say that the filling in of the chair position is still a concern, but as the DG has said, they have complained that the problem with the delay is because of the high number of applications that they're filling, and we were told that they were moving to peer recruitment by 2018. My concern is that even now, we are hearing that even in this 2018, maybe it will be next year. It might be because of whatever issues in treasury, but for me, really, to keep on not being able to achieve what you are supposed to do as a department, it is a serious concern, because it's not about just filling in the key position. We want efficiency in the sector. So if the people are there, it means that work will be done. That is the concern, but not about just employment opportunities only, but it's about efficiency in the sector. So I would like to know why the department continues to use the strategy not using the intended or the content of that. It was once we were told, it was reported that the new data system will be used because there was an issue in terms of heavy data, number of enrollments we have not. I would like to know, because maybe by now we do have an insight into what is happening in the system, whether it will alleviate data challenges experienced in the system. Thirdly, what is the progress in the allocation of infrastructure and to TVET colleges? On 18, on your slide 18, you are reflecting on Western Cape Council that they have not yet adopted the policy just want to know what concerns management is with the Western Cape Council as they think not to implement what the department has developed to improve governance in the sector. Just to have an idea whether it is as a priority. And has the Western Cape CEC Council appointed an SRC? It was also reported to us that the CET would have some kind of a program or a curriculum in order to, you know, to challenge them. Because what is being done mostly is the second term matric or the undergraduate, but we were of the idea that there should be other programs that are being taught in order to ensure that even in the elderly people are also able to be assisted in this sector. So just a comment on that, whether is there anything that you are doing around this issue. I would like to know from the department whether they have evaluated the impact of the publication of the list of occupations in high demand, in which in line with program offering, in line with the skills identified, and are there any training institutions aligning their offering to these programs or skills in high demand? What my worry is that we continue to have the high number of young people who are unemployed, but yet we publish, I think every year, the list of occupations or skills in high demand. That, for me, I think it needs to assist us in ensuring that we are training people in what is required so that they can be able to fend for themselves. On finance, lastly, I was looking at the Treasury report on the budget and expenditure, where the department has projected to spend the 4.7 billion and ended up on actual, and the amount actual spent is 33 billion for the first quarter, which means it's less 2.0 billion. This is from the report, they are saying that it's due to the delays in transfers of payment of earmarked grants in Program 3, which is universities, and Program 4, which is student colleges. I just want to know what impact does this have on the running of the institutions themselves, and why is it that the department is not able to do what it is supposed to do, or the issues are on the side of the university. You can explain that to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. One question. Program 4, TVET. Slide number 7. Sub-policy number 3. The total of 47 regularities were detected in March 2018, of which 5 were administrative and 42 were acts of dishonesty. Can we get a little bit of elaboration on that? Because if really there is dishonesty in the department, and whether it's warm bodies or the system, that was honest, what is honest. Can we get a little bit of expansion about what that means? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I really shift gears from my side to mine to the department on the issues that were raised in the second and the third quarter. So because there are some that are recurring again in this program. So let me go to the second portion, so this is a story, and then come back to the third portion. On the side of the service policy, we expressed concern around the five service policies. So we didn't really say anything about it this time. Those colleges were the bad, the outstanding audits, Johnny, North and South, Teddy Bend, Northern State. I think that Teddy Bend is the one that is upside down and not in a good shape at all. So that was the second quarter that we pointed out these things. Chuani had outstanding orders from 2015. The orders were finalized in 2018. We, of course, raised again the filling of the vacancies, and we were told about the 500 applications. It seems like it's still at 500. This is the second quarter that we told us. No, we didn't have a chance to answer. We're happy to hear there are some movement. We want to remind you what you said. You said that you will be able to fill the advertised positions within 180 days. Not sure where we are now. We raised in the second quarter the increasing number of suicides from students in higher education and training institutions. This is for both of you, college and university. And then you told us you would develop a policy regulation to support universities in developing their own student support services. You might want to talk to us about that. Then on the CET, you told us that you were going to finalize the conditions of service of the CET educators. And then you told us that I'm sure you tell us just now about rationalization. So you'll give us update on the rationalization program later. And then Dr. Nauti, you told us about the finalization of legislation. Then you told us anything in this report about legislation. The central application services role, an access role, and so on. And then we made recommendations around all those issues that I've just raised. And then you told us in the third quarter that we of course were very excited about the eradication of the certification backlog, but we expressed concerns about the outstanding native certificate and diploma. You might want to talk to us about it. University, we spoke about the decline in the enrollment targets and the graduate output for higher education in the 2017 academic year. But we spoke quite a bit about the ICT registration system. And indeed, can you tell us when you say that there's
you experience some problem, then if you need it again, because in the last report it was condition that caused you not to meet your target, is it the same institution again, and if so, what has been done to it? And then the service sector spoke about the management information system. There was an absence of a functional management information system. I think you spoke a little bit about the examination system, that we're obviously coming towards examination link time again. And then finance, in the third quarter we spoke about the delay in transferring 3.9 billion subsidies to the university in the HDI. And there were earmarked grants on infrastructure efficiency, and we raised that as a concern as it relates to the expansion of teaching and learning infrastructure. We see you talking again about infrastructure, and again the unknown movements. I think we spoke about the faculty that put together a document for all of this. We spoke about the curriculum stuff in the third quarter on the portfolio. We expressed the continued understanding on compensation of employees, and so that we said that we noted the throughput rate of the service sector was very low, and we said that the target is way too modest at that point. And then of course I spoke about the absence of the infrastructure. Maintenance grant for the service sector was noted as a concern, and the committee indicated that the majority of the student residences at the service colleges were in a bad state and others were shut down, as observed during the our own oversight that we had. And then we made a range of recommendations around the things that I pointed out. The department should explore a more efficient process of administering the university infrastructure grant to avoid the underspending. It seems like we're heading for, we are underspending already, and it's and it is related to that. I thought I would point out to you what we spoke about. I didn't read the first one and the second and the third and the fourth time. So let me just take the two and show you that they are recurring things that that are in the quarterly report. And I think it will be good to take the committee into confidence. Why do we have these, you know, they are the same areas. So it's not new stories that you are bringing up in the first quarter. If the first quarter kicks off in the manner that it does, it means we're now going to have a second quarter saying the same thing, third quarter the same thing, and so on. And you might want to tell us now already in the first quarter, these are your plans in these particular areas that I pointed out. If there are more, I can encourage you to read our reports that we do. They all put to respond to them. That doesn't mean that all of them have been sent to you. One of the problems is following the long system of the inputs and I can send you and the doctor and you've got something
But it is a very small portion, a drop in the bucket
that was not claimed in terms of interest and redemption claims from the institution. But all the other earmarked grants were paid. As we explained at the end of the third quarter, the delays once again was in the last quarter of the financial year because of all these processes, mechanisms, conditions that the department did put in place to ensure that we do not allow fiscal dumping. The similar situation is happening in the first quarter this year. However, even the minister raised a concern exactly on the same matter. On what basis do we not penalize the institution? And for that reason, we did also already liaise with the relevant branches to ensure that by the end of August, we initially said by the end of July, we allowed an additional time to say that provide to us the actual allocation and the estimated transfer schedule for the remainder of this financial year, so that we can also monitor it and ensure that Treasury is also updated with this revised transfer schedule so that we do not unnecessarily draw money and those monies are not transferred to the various institutions on time. So that managed, so that process is then accordingly managed also for this current financial year. So I think those are the most critical aspects. The last one that I would want to highlight is that there is very detailed exercises going on currently between the Director General and the Minister in terms of ensuring that during the adjustment estimate process, where it is appropriate, that funds are shifted around to ensure that we do not leave money on places where it cannot be spent, and that we rather reallocate timeously and ensure that proper processes can happen for the remainder of the financial year. That exercise must be concluded in December when the new inputs for the adjusted estimates must go to Treasury and they will manage that accordingly, and maybe we can report by the end of the second quarter on what happens on those. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Bozoli is asking a very important question with regards to the process towards trade testing, as to whether there is a requirement for a pre, if one were to say pre-trade testing, a requirement. Well, I can say in affirmative we do not have that arrangement. And then, of course, if we were to have that arrangement, that would also escalate the cost of a candidate who's coming for trade testing, because that would have meant that that candidate will go and pay for pre-trade testing, whether the outcomes of pre-trade testing will say you are not competent, you will have to pay because there would have been labor associated with that exercise. So we do not have it, but I always say, I said also in the previous session of the Portfolio Committee, I like this target, even though it's difficult to achieve because we do not have control. At least it's giving us some baseline as to with regard to the pass rate. And I must also mention, even though the pass rate target we are not meeting, but then the target for artisans found competent, we always meet that target. So that's the good part about it. It's like this year we have met also, but then the age is still busy. I cannot speak with that process. We have met also the target for 2017-18 with regard to artisans found competent, as well as those who are enrolling for apprenticeship within the system. The situation is a bit different with artisan recognition of prior learning, whereby there will be an assessor who is assessing the portfolio of evidence that is presented by this candidate, and then the assessor will make such a determination as to whether Mbalo is competent to be trade tested. And I like also perhaps to venture the assessment the way they do it in Mauritius. In Mauritius, when someone goes for artisan recognition of prior learning, they do have what they call is a facilitation process. They appoint an assessor, whereby an assessor is taking a person through the process, because it could be a cumbersome exercise for someone who never went to school, but then is having all the experiences, practical experience, but he or she wants to get a certificate in terms of trade testing. But then at the end, they do not do trade testing as we do in South Africa. They've got a panel, they call it a jury panel, with about five people who are seated there, well experienced in the area. Then someone once in that panel, they say Mvalo is competent, then you are awarded a certificate. With us in South Africa, we'll assess you through an assessor, but then you still have to go through a trade testing. So the process is a bit different there with regard to artisan recognition of prior learning. Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you very much, Mvalo. Do you often go to Mauritius?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've raised two issues on CET. The one on the compliance with the governance policies. The council said in the second week of July to actually adopt the council the policies. So by now they have actually done this. It's just at the point of reporting at the end of the first quarter they had not complied at the time. And on the issue of the SRC, the college does not have an SRC as yet, but we have written formally to them about them not complying, and so that they also give us their plan to when can they actually elect, make sure that the college has elected an SRC.
The other issues raised, Chair, by Honourable Member Nkun. One is about fit for purpose programs in CET colleges to advantage the adults who may not necessarily be interested in academics. There are programs being offered, but they are not centrally determined. They are determined by the college, and they are determined as to which center will offer those programs. Such instances as in Pumalanga, there are a few centers which offer programs which they work with the teachers to deliver them. And in Gauteng also, there are selected centers which they work independent of the department. They work with the teachers to offer those programs. Of importance to note is that there is no, there has got to be capacity to deliver the programs, and therefore you will need accreditation. And they are working with individual centers as well as the two CTOs to get some centers accredited to offer those programs. But I must agree that the process is pretty slow, but there's some progress being made with some of the centers. During the course of this month, I think we will be going to about 52 centers which we have identified to target exactly program diversification. First, we have to check, are they full-time, in other words, they operate for 7-8 hours, they have the correct number of lecturers, who have the capacity, in other words, to determine what capacity we must build in those centers so that they can do that which you are saying needs to be done. At the last year, I think we identified 10, and this year we have added 4 per college. except for Hauteng, which gave us 12. So that the number we are looking at now is 52, which we are going to again experiment with expanding the program mix, but determined at the institution depending on the demands of the communities where the center is. Now, also another project in this with regard to programs, we are concluding the establishment of the academic boards for each college so that the PQM, which is not managed by the department, it becomes the responsibility of the academic board reporting to council. And that is the work, that's the work that we are finalizing just now. Chair, the issue of the condition, the issue of finalizing the conditions of service for CET lecturers, something which is going to be gradual, is going to be with us for quite some time. We have not concluded the process of translation. Remember last time when we spoke about the translation of the salaries from the public service, from the PEM to the public service regulations. That process has not been concluded yet, because out of that process, then we have to make a determination of then how much is it going to cost the department to finalize the translation and standardize. In the same breath, Chair, among those things we talked about a matter of Limpopo, that when the lecturers of Limpopo were transferred to us, they were transferred already, the province having cut their salaries with the threat from September, by the time they came to us, there was a gap of 6 months between September and March, which the province needed to fill before they transferred to us. And then at the moment, the discussions between ourselves, the lecturers, and is that we are working on, we have written to Treasury to alert Treasury about the need, if possible, to agree with the province of Limpopo that gap is filled, and also ourselves, the discussion in the department, we have to find money somewhere so that we bring it to par with the rest of the department. And that is the kind of work which is ongoing, which we are working on at the moment in the department. But at the point, just in anticipation of the fact that we had earlier quantified a particular amount, and we have then prepared the bill, but with the bill, but the MCAT guidelines said no, there is no new money. You are not going to, it's not necessary for you to submit, but we had to quantify what exactly it would cost us to standardize the conditions of service. But I think we must start by translation first. Once we conclude the translation, we determine the quantum of money, and then the department then would know where it would find money to standardize the conditions of service. Chair, the process of rationalization, of reconfiguration and or rationalization of center is still ongoing. What the branch of the department has done has drafted a draft plan which mirrors chapter 3 of the NPC, National Plan for the Implementation of the White Paper, so that rationalization becomes part and parcel of the plan for the CET college, so that you do not, you have to rationalize within the context of the plan. And so that plan, once the minister approves the entry set, and then we take the process on the basis of the new norms as to what is the center, what is the satellite, what should be the lecturer-student ratio. And then we are able to, at the point when the entry set is concluded, and at the point when the minister approves our plan, we will have the norm which will guide colleges as to how to rationalize and reduce the centers from the 3,276 to a manageable number. We have about four proposals which, if one of them is approved by the minister, and then we will use that one to guide colleges to rationalize the number of centers. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the specific questions that were asked by Honourable Petano, that we should give the information. Chair, I mentioned that because we're talking of about 29,000, post-establishment in the department. And when I said that we can share information, I'm saying in terms of the context. But we can give the specific questions on principles. Between quarter 4 and quarter 1, we had 10 vacancies of principles. And the department has filled 8 out of 10. We left with only 2 out of 50 to the colleges, 2 are without principles. It is in West and West Coast in the West Coast. The reason for West Coast is that we shortly said we could not identify the candidate and we are headhunting. So I wasn't sure how much specific that would give. For Ingwe, we are in the process of appointing the principal, and we will not have any college without a principal in the previous college. In respect to deputy chairperson, I can report to the committee that between quarter 4 and the first quarter of 2018, we've appointed 17 deputy principals. You know, we've appointed 10 campus managers. And I will confine myself to the levels where the department has a delegation, because the rest of the sector, the principals are delegated to appoint in that state. Now, in terms of the SMS vacancies in the department, between the last quarter when we were here and quarter 1, we've appointed 8 SMS members in the department. And if you include the 8 principals, it gives you a total of 18. That gives us a vacancy rate at this stage of 8.2%. At the end of quarter 4, we reported a vacancy rate of 6.5. The vacancy rate is a moving target. It doesn't stay the same. And we would never have a situation where there is no vacancy rate at all. Hence, DPSA has set a target of 10%. And the department has, for the past 2 years, been exceeding that vacancy rate of 10%. As I'm reporting, to date, we are standing at 8.2% vacancy rate. Now, I can say with Anele, the spreadsheets and leave the meeting, Honorable Kesana, have gotten it. I can't go to the detail.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Then, when it comes to the number of days it takes to fill a post, the target in terms of the program of action is 180 days. And I reported that on average now we are selling 181 days instead of 180 days. And I said we are short of 1 day if we calculate average. And here it doesn't mean that there is no post that is filled within 2 months, 3 months, 4 months in the department. We do achieve even less than the 180. However, this is an average looking at all the posts in the department. I wish we could have 500 applications. Right now, Chair, we had an update for 77 posts. We've got 55,000 applications, not 500. Hence, we are saying our strategy includes introducing an independent system. And I just say that we do have a slight challenge with that because of the moratorium. It is a working strategy. It's working in some of the departments. However, Honorable, what are we doing besides the e-recruitment system? We are standardizing our processes for the entire department. So, for instance, we would have quarterly bulletins that include quality, so that we are able to monitor even what is happening at the quality level. However, principals are still dedicated to appoint, you know, your lecturers. We are using public service regulation section number 8, which says that for lower positions, you do not need to always advertise if a post was advertised in a period of 6 months. So you use the same advert. And that is what has assisted us actually to even reach the target of 181 days. We have delegated, we have lowered the delegation. Now the Director General is the one who approves appointments for salary level 13 up to 14. In the past, those were not delegated. They would go to the minister. The DDGs are delegated for salary levels 9 to 12, and principals and the rest are delegated for lower levels. We also reported that we use service providers for capturing these applications. And we have appointed a service provider who is assisting us in capturing the 54,000 applications. That has been done, that was done. I think that relates to recruitment. And I hope Chairperson have addressed the questions in respect to this. We believe that the strategies that we're implementing are working. Because in 2016-17, we were at 422 days. And we see a reduction now. Hence, we are standing at 181 days. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Zoli, I think the first question around the collaboration framework, it has included academics. In fact, the dialogue that we had included everybody that we could think of who might be involved in it. That was the TUBIC branch and the university branch, SACPO, USAF, QCTA, CHE, SACPO, etc., but also all of the key departments that have professional bodies under them and the professional bodies. So all of them have been involved, and that's why we're thinking maybe what we have to do is to try to create a protocol around how we collaborate in the system on this. The second issue, I know it's not directly related to this, but about indebted students. The process that we are undergoing is really focusing on NSFAS qualifying students and leaders, and not the debt of general students in the system. I think, Honourable Mutunu, in terms of the programs and the linkages to occupations in high demand, and other signals that are coming from the kind of demand side of the system. With the university system, we have quite a well-established enrollment planning and academic planning process. And part of that is about working with institutions to look at how they plan for enrollment going into the future, linking the supply side to signals from the demand side.
we can't do a it's not a direct linear process at all. But what happens is that in those engagements, we try to highlight the kinds of occupations that and career choices that are becoming more in demand. We look at what are the government's policies and where are we trying to create additional skills. And in that process, we develop it. We're about to go into the next enrollment planning process now. Universities are busy working on that, and we will be getting the next enrollment plan kind of by July next year for the following 6-year cycle. They always go 2-year rolling cycle. But it's not an exact time. It really isn't. I just wanted to add in terms of the issue around the delays with the earmark grant. I think this covers a number of questions that were asked. For the university sector, I think the CFO explained very well that it's not impacting on the operational costs. These are all linked to the earmark grant. And one of the difficulties is planning for when those grants will actually be transferred. Because of this issue of having to analyse what is happening and get the reports from all the institutions and check the audits and make sure they utilise the funds effectively. The key issues this year now in terms of the delays and that amount that the CFO reported were around the infrastructure efficiency grant. And that was specifically linked to the plan that universities had put in to us by the end of January this year. We then had to have an analysis of those plans. You will be aware that we have implemented the macro infrastructure framework, and that is all linked into this whole process. So what did happen is we had planned to have finished that analysis and that process and have the minister have signed off on the initial amount of the grants to be transferred for approved projects to a certain upfront amount by the end of June, but it didn't happen by the end of June, and it only happened by the end of sort of mid-July. So the funds are gone now, but it's obviously going to meet the first quarter task. So that's part of the difficulty there. And the other issue that I think is important to recognise is that our key accountability tool is to revolve funds from institutions who don't report effectively or who haven't actually carried out what they needed to come. So we found every year that there is this difficulty in ensuring that we get institutions to report on time. We work with them. They do generally report on time, but the problem is the quality of the reporting and checking that everything is correct. And I can just give you two examples that show how we hold this couple. The one is in relation to the clinical training grant. Last year there was an amount of 33 million that we made a decision in the end not to send to institutions that had been earmarked for, because these institutions were showing a history of not having sent certain amounts. And that funding then was reallocated to, in fact, it was reallocated to support these new students that are returning from the Mandela Castro program. So I think, you know, that's what we do. We've also done that, particularly with research development and the teaching development grants, where they haven't been effectively spent on the programs that are approved, we've then reallocated to their new generation of access program, which has allowed us to accelerate that program. So I think, it's difficult because when we report we haven't spent, it's not that we haven't spent, it's that it didn't go in terms of what we had hoped would be transferred. But what we have agreed with the CFO's office is that we're going to do a very deep analysis of, you know, the likelihood of how we will disperse funds and try to get more and more accurate around that. I think the issues related to the second and third quarter that the chair brought up are very important. I mean, I, as you were speaking, I was reflecting on it and thinking it's maybe a lesson we can learn in terms of reporting to the portfolio committee, that we should go back to the reports from the previous meeting, pick up on issues that were highlighted there. I mean, start our report with a reflection on those and link it in. I think it's a good lesson, and thank you very much for that. I think that's very helpful. I think the issue of the development of the policy, I'm going to have to go back and read the report to just check which policy was being referred to, because I need to just understand which one it was, and then I can perhaps give a report on progress on that. The cash bill, where are we with that? You know, we do have a draft bill now that has been developed, and it's on its way through the council process to go to cabinet to get approved to publish for public comment. We had hoped to actually submit it for today's meeting at the cluster, but then we had to be at the portfolio committee, so it's probably going to go to the next meeting. And when we're at the next meeting, we will then hopefully be able to take it to cabinet by the end of this year or early next year. If it's approved, it'll go out for public comment, and we'll hopefully be in the parliamentary process next year. The NISTAT bill, just in terms of that, we did a review of the NISTAT bill, but what came out of the review was that we didn't need to actually change the act. What we needed was a regulation that underpinned the Act to enable us to, with the concurrence of the Minister, to actually develop and promulgate policy in relation to student financial aid. And that was finalised and debated, I think, early in the year. So we met that target in that sense, that it was reviewed and the regulation came out. It may be that we would re-look at the bill now again in the light of the new processes that are coming in, but that's not what we were looking at when we reviewed the bill last year. In terms of the enrollment numbers that were not met, yes, we didn't meet the enrollment numbers for the system, and that was mostly linked to UNISA. And it was linked to UNISA's two things, and it's a kind of tail end going on for 2 years, 3 years now. The one was them implementing an admissions policy for the first time, where they were dealing with, saying, because previously it was an open door policy, and a lot of students who were allowed in were not able to succeed. So they had to put that in. And the second one was their IT system. They now seem to have fixed that IT system. The report that I've got from our HEMIS officer is it looks as if they've kind of readjusted themselves and they're back on track, but we will only be able to see that when we get the audited data in this year and sort of it's coming in at the moment by August, September, October, we will report on the audited data and we will know then whether or not we've dealt with that. In terms of the, I've spoken about the dispersed funds, so that's I think that's it. Those are all of the questions that were asked about.
Thank you, Jay. I have many questions. So let me try and group them by topic, so it's not just speak person, but I'd rather deal with them by topic. So let me start with exams and say that, the glitches that we've had in our IT system, that is really the reason why we're developing the new system. Now, the new system, it's not up and running yet. We're in that testing phase at the moment. But the intention is certainly that the new system must deal with those glitches, and that we must build a system that's fit for purpose without those sorts of problems. But then to say that within the teaching system, and as we are working through different problems, they are, let's say, putting fixes into the IT system to be able to do certain things. So for example, a candidate does seven subjects in NCD, and the system is not able to link across years. That was one of the issues, or across all subjects, or, you know. So the particular fixes have been built, and that's in that way that we've really managed to reduce the certification backlog. So, I mean, it's an ongoing process. Sometimes ID numbers or something that comes up, for example, somebody has a name change, a lady gets married, she now has a married surname, and the old surname, a common ID, you know, so there's all those sorts of things that they needed to do and to check. So they just talk a little bit about the improvements that we have made and from previous reports. You know, this report that I have in front of me now, the one that I was quoting from 6 August, for example, on the NATES business studies, I've just reported a figure of 1,381 candidates that are outstanding. That number comes from, or was previously reported as 18,800. You know, so you can see that it's a remarkable shift that we're making. In the engineering, it's not that big yet, but we are down from 17,300 to 10,900. So we're getting there. You know, the 10,000 still seems a lot, but what gives me confidence is that we're moving. You know, those numbers are moving. So I'm not saying that we're all fixed up and that it's fine. Those that are outstanding still are outstanding and they have to be fixed. You know, but we can see the progress. So in terms of the certification backlog, I think that was from a previous meeting. We are slowly but surely getting there. Then in terms of the new system, so two things, and the college's ability to work with the new system. You know, I think there are IT issues, but there are also discipline issues. And the discipline issues we will deal with in a disciplinary way, you know, so letters of reprimand, etc., etc. And, you know, that sort of process is already ongoing. You know, where they receive it is to say, we haven't received X, Y, and Z, and so on. So there's a process of that. In terms of the specific IT, and our colleges will accept that, one of the things in the user acceptance testing is that colleges are already a part of that process. So it's sort of, although it's user acceptance testing, it's already started to familiarize them with the system. A bit of system training, but also we are working on an entire change management program. Now, so we would have to take exam officers through a process and program to familiarize them with the system and to get all of them on board. So, I mean, that is a process that we would have to go through. From where I'm sitting, I'm hoping that it's going to be a fairly user-friendly system. You know, maybe it won't be too complicated, but we know every change brings its challenges and we just have to be ready to deal with that. So that was on the future. Then, on the irregularities, the 5 irregularities that are administrative, those things typically relate to errors on the examination center side. So maybe a box was opened too early, or papers were kept in a safe, or, you know, it could be any one of those sort of administrative things. The acts of dishonesty relate to students. So where crib notes are found on a student, or, for example, there's a rule that says they may not take cell phones into exam room where a cell phone is found on a student. You know, those are sort of acts of dishonesty. I think these are... I mean, we want our young people to be honest, but we know. I guess we've all been there at some stage that, you know, script no law. Now, not that I'm condoning it, but I don't want to say that these are, you know, sort of criminal acts of dishonesty. They petty acts of dishonesty. So that is what that moral relates to. Of course, exam leaks. You know, this always is a matter that is of great concern for us. What we are finding a lot of students doing is they distribute old exam papers. I'm presuming in most of the cases it's old or sort of fraudulent exam papers, and then they distribute them. Messages come to us that papers have leaked, but when we really look at it, we can see, you know, these are old papers or they don't have our barcoding and watermarks and those sorts of things on. So I'm not exactly sure what's the issue there, you know, are they sort of creating exam papers, false information, selling them, making money out of it. You know, I think there's something bigger behind it that we actually need to get to the bottom of. For this past exam cycle, I can report that we have had one leak. That was mathematics in 3. And we are investigating that to try and see what exactly the origins were and to try and deal with that situation. So that's an exam leak. Okay. Then, I think those are all the exam questions. I can go on to the infrastructure question. We're developing the standards. I mean, we do have for this year $1.3 billion for infrastructure maintenance, and that will be, you know, a recurring amount for the next 3 years. And so, you know, I think it's actually for the first time that we do have funding for TVET colleges for infrastructure maintenance. And, you know, and it's important that it gets to the right place. I guess that's really the intention behind the standards. That particular grant we've going to disperse in 3 tranches, and the first tranche was due to be paid now at the end of Q1, and in the financials that was the tranche that was delayed. So it will not have an effect on the college. I mean, if they will continue running the operations, that portion, the maintenance portion, was just withheld, and it was withheld specifically because we wanted to be sure that the maintenance plan that I spoke of earlier come in, and you know that we put some measures in place to just disburse money easily, but that we have certain controls in place to manage that. And that was the reason why it was late, but we don't anticipate that this is going to be a problem for the year going forward. Okay. The issue of curriculum is not a target for us this year, but that doesn't mean that the work has stopped. So there are curriculum revisions carrying on. I mean, there are still the bigger policy issues, the NCD qualification policy that now needs to be finalized. And so those are ongoing processes in the department. It's, you know, we're just not reporting it here. But as Dr. Parker earlier said, I mean, we can take some reflections from these meetings, and you know, if it's necessary, then we can report on those things, maybe in a second quarter. But I think that's no problem. We can do that. Enrollment data for TVET colleges. You would know that we were, I guess, over enrolled. Some would call it underfunding, others over enrollment. And we did try and stabilize our numbers at the 710,000 mark. It does look to us now that in our 2017 data that it has dropped slightly, but I'm fairly confident as our new funding is phased in that those numbers will go up, and it will start to increase slightly again. But as to the exact reasons, I don't yet have the data to, you know, pinpoint exactly where the drops were and what the causes of that might have been. Then, Chair, your question about the outstanding audits. We have actually quite a comprehensive report on colleges. There's a little process that they go through in terms of the audited financial statements. that would be requested of AG, we recall when that request goes, the AG audit, the statements are completed, submitted to the DHT. So there's sort of different milestones in that process that we record, and we have a comprehensive report on it. I just don't have that report with me now, but I mean, okay, if you certainly make that available. If you ask me these five troublesome colleges, if they're still in, I can't remember, so I don't want to say they are or they aren't. Let me rather have a look at the report and then I can answer officially. But Teg Ben, for sure, I know is still in the list. I know that just because we deal with it specifically. MIS function. Actually, we've been quite satisfied with our MIS at the end of the 2017 financial year. We did some audits, triangulated data back to college data, and we found that our data was in a sort of 5% margin of error. And so we've been quite confident that our MIS data and the data system is actually now starting to work and function properly. But I can ask Dr. Nashi for us to say something about the data system as well. I think I've covered everything. A management information system. It's the system where we record all our enrollment data. Yeah, thank you.
And the law. And Chair and colleagues, you might be relieved to know I don't have too many questions. But on the other hand, I'm a bit of a big talker, so I can't keep you longer, but I'll try not to, Jim. Okay. So I'll start with the first question, which was on open learning and where would they do practical work. And the way we look at open learning right now is that it's linked to existing institutions, mainly the TVET colleges. So we're actually talking more about open education resources being placed on the system rather than people enrolling for programs which are sort of just in the air. Because the DHET is not a provider of programs, they are linked to what particularly TVET colleges and community colleges offer. So that's the one material. Two is the issue about the occupations in high demand. And as Dr. Parker said, that list is a signal to TVET colleges and universities. And the reason it's a signal is that the institutions have to take into account their own local environment, their local context. So a college which is, or an institution which is in a rural area, compared to one which is in a highly urban area, cannot use a national list, which may not be applicable to their context. But also their context depends on the lecturers, the infrastructure, and so on. So the OIHD is a signal to them. But we are motivating very strongly, like right now, next week, or this week rather, we will be going to all the planning sessions that TVET colleges are having with their principals, to draw the attention to occupations that are in high demand, to ask them to see whether they could offer programs that could link up. But local context becomes very important. Somebody can't offer tourism if it's enough, in high demand. But of course, bearing in mind, we do want to encourage migration interprovincially and so on, but practicalities are there. We are listening very strongly for curricula. Career development services, where we are encouraging students to enroll in such programs so that they do that. The National Skills Fund uses the list to determine the bursaries that they give, so they are prioritizing the bursaries for those occupations and qualifications linked to those occupations, and our international scholarships are directed for those kinds of occupations. And we have also undertaken proactive responses. So besides the signaling, there are some occupations where we're actively proactive about it. And the primary one
infrastructure program, DIFIP, and that's been done through the Center of Specialization program. So it's a direct response to occupations that are required. And cars is one of them. The other one is the ocean economy. They need a program for that. And then lastly, on the legislation, besides the CAP and the NUSCAT bill, on the NQF bill, we will be coming to Portfolio Committee on the 22nd of August for the open hearing.
Okay.
You'll update us on that one. Yeah, that's why I raised it. I was hoping you'll do that. And lastly, on the Tibet Myth, I just want to say that is one good piece of news. We've got a good Tibet Myth action plan going. We're working with an external helper provider, and we're doing things systematically to fix it. These are deep-rooted issues that go right back to 1999. These things are going to take time. We're going to work bit by bit, chew off small things at a time, because we can't fix these things just like that. As you said, a lot of it depends not only on what happens at DHET, but the capacity of the colleges. So TMS will only be successful when both the DHET and the college are able to reach the same level of that thing. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, let me thank you again and just respond on some of the things. I can hear the DDG for administration is exacerbated about, you know, all these outstanding vacancies and so on. Let me assist in what was said. It's not 500. It is 500 per post we said the last time. So for times it was there. That's what I meant to say. Yes, we will take the information from the college principals, and you can send it to us. Yes, you can send the information on the five colleges, the ones that are not doing very well, as pointed out by the auditor general. But I think it's a lesson to relearn, especially in five colleges. I don't think we'll have to wait for the annual report to say that this is the situation. But I know there can be more on the list than the general annual report. And as it relates to CEDIBEN, which you know I communicated to the department, it will be in your interest to inform us on what steps are being taken to bring the institution to what it's supposed to be. But apart from CEDIBEN not sorting out the order, the college is not functioning. If you don't have an audit, it means you're not functioning. It means you don't have governance, proper governance in place, a range of those things. I am worried that things are escalating at that institution. I know the department is doing something, but we think there's much more. So we really can't allow people to carry on and do other than what they are supposed to at the college. On the bowl, we have advertised. And the deadline is on the 29th of August, and thereafter we'll gauge how many responses we have received, and we hope we can schedule the ball for the beginning of September. So we have to undertake our own processes of what we have to do. And lastly, before we take the CET, let me give a warning now that due to the changes in the parliamentary program, we will have to engage with yourself on how we will deal with the second and the third quarter. And remember, we came from a long recess, and then next we're going to have the your annual report. But we will discuss it with yourself to see how we will schedule it on our own program. if we have to lump the two together, I'm sure you'll be happy about that. But we'll have to see to manage with our own program. But I wanted to stop there because we need to take the CET report. It is 12:09. I wanted us to deal with the CET report, have lunch here in this room, and then we proceed to the last report. Honorable Tikana?
That is short line, in our oversight, the local group when we children is very important. But we don't see happening that children in Kobani, which cover for children, rest of children. That's a second town in the Limpopo area. And what was predominantly that was hotel services. The agriculture section is very good, but it's not easy there, especially construction, because there are a lot of villages with smart houses. If you train in builders, carpenters, because of the electric supply, that will help because you can convert all the smart houses into company built houses. So we thought engineering should also be there because there's Mukopani College, which has been vacant for about 20 years because it was a teacher training college. We thought that could have been an extension producing engineering. This applies to Skokuli College also. So we don't think local oriented kind of skills have produced and this is what we have before because our oversight is our better.
All right. Thank you, Honourable Member. We can always we will continue to debate this. May I lastly ask all of you when you do brain presentations, Honourable Tikana has a new device now that Parliament has given to him. Doesn't have it here now, but you will see it soon in the meeting. So there's a new device, so you need to bring like a stick.
Memory
stick. So you have to bring a separate memory stick for him to put it onto his device for him to read your document. I won't take you out there.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a silent protest.
Yeah.
It's a silent protest.
Yeah.
Okay,
no.
My
brother, I'm going to send the chamber.
is about the
my
sister
is
not
my
I finally
Professor Pozzolo is here.
Put him up.
We miss you.
You
are too busy.
Hey.
You are everywhere.
I know that I'm not a parent too. So you just correction that. I'm under the rules. I don't know. I don't know. Any friend who will give out to us and sign them, then they will put her like in the corner. You are
So when do you think we must? I don't think it's urgent, but for us to meet
So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to say it. Who got the recommendation that we want to like that? Like copying and pasting, and then discussion, include discussion.
That was a wonderful activity, that one. Ah, you should have gone there. Uzo bon. We were talking about the rumbuzo, we see it, but I call it, but it was very much like it. Because Land of in Antica is training localized, they're responsive to the needs of the community. That is what happening there. My honorable, Sipiri Lundanwe. Yeah, and that one is a fool.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to be doing a presentation on the progress we have made around the challenges in the community education and training space. My presentation is actually short, Chairperson, and in terms of the outline, there's just a little bit of background. I will not go into introducing the program because it was done earlier when we were working on the first quarter. But the challenges that we want to talk to, and in terms of what we have done with them, are listed there, the 2.1 there to 2.7, the declining and fluctuating enrollment rates, teaching and learning, lecturer qualifications, demand and supply, financial management system and internal control, infrastructure, conditions of service, which I think Dr. Matobe has touched on already, so that one is taken care of. And specifically, there is a slide that talks to the Western, to the challenges in the Western Cape. Chairperson, if you allow me, I can go through the presentation as this and take the Western Cape with the last slide. It's just this organizing. Thank you. Okay. In terms of the background, and which is what informs the challenges that we are presenting here. As a branch, we have a commitment in our APP to monitor the colleges, and we do this monitoring on a quarterly basis. And based on that, we have reports then that come to us that we analyze, and based on those reports, we are able to actually produce a system performance report, which we do on an annual basis, even though we monitor quarterly. The approach of monitoring on a quarterly basis allows us to identify challenges early and then also determine challenges that need short-term intervention that we can deal with quickly
and also some of the challenges then inform our long-term planning, because they might need us to have a long-term solution towards them. And in terms of I think the report is the report that was requested that we should provide earlier on the system performance, because it will give you a whole lot of issues. But that is the report that we are actually, we have lifted the challenges from and we are presenting it to you. And today we have two reports, and like I said, we do this to monitor in terms of our role of support and oversight, but also the portfolio committee has raised specific issues earlier on with us that we need to address in terms of the PET. I'll go to the first challenge, which is the declining and the fluctuating enrollment rate. We have a challenge in terms of the enrollment in the sector, and the figures that are put there, 2015, 2016, 2017, I think for the benefit of Honorable Tekan, I must just mention them. 2015, our enrollment was sitting at 285,000. 2016, we had 272,431. 2017, 262,166. The first quarter of this year, we have 243,231. And for us, when we look at this, at these figures, I think this for us is an urgent call by our students for program diversification. We have seen a decline, serious decline in terms of enrollment for specifically in the literacy program. The enrollments are really declining. We see students who come to us with a high demand to do GETC, which is at QF level 1, but also have students who come calling for senior certificate and the rewrite of national senior certificate. So there the figures are actually high, and the learners, and one of the things that we've noticed that our students are now much, much younger, and their demands are therefore different. But also took it further, because we have a tool that goes out that is used to do this monitoring. We see that part of the courses, the stigmatization against the program, and particularly with the male participants in the program. We have very, very low of them, they are not willing to come. There are socio-economic reasons that affect our learners. The issue of unattractive programs is really high there. Poor advocacy is also an issue. So these courses, they actually help us, because whatever intervention or progress that we must make is therefore informed, and we are sure that it will then change the situation in the sector. And if this number keep declining, obviously our NDP target, which we must make in terms of the NDP, become compromised, and the program diversification, are we responding to learners that are coming to us and not? So these are the sectors that then affect us. In terms of what we have done, which we have called to be a progress in this instance, Dr. Masogo mentioned earlier on that there are 52 centers that we have identified, which are going to pilot the true concept of community program offering. And this does not preclude, the colleges to have more centers offering any other skills, but the 52, we are going to focus on them to make sure that they truly diversify, they are responding to the needs of the communities as they are actually brought to us. And these centers, these are the centers where we are going to also pilot the concept of NASCA, the National Senior Certificate for Adults. We are going to pilot it through this center. So, but besides that, the important thing is that this center must make sure that the issue of program diversification happens, the skills program that respond to the communities are there. And what is happening currently is that the branch is actually, there's a team that goes out to verify this identified center, because we don't want to accept from the colleges that these are the centers that can do. But from our side, there's a team that's going to go out to look at the suitability, the capacity around the centers, how can we assist them, how can we build up in terms of resources that they're able to offer the CET. But also importantly is to also to have a look at the communities that surround the centers, because one of the things is that those centers must begin to offer programs that are responding to the needs of the communities, the immediate communities around the centers. So it's important then that the team goes out and check all these things that they are actually there. The other thing that we have made is the issue, we are progressing in the issue of having partnerships that actually assist us in terms of offering the CET. And as indicated earlier, we're seeing slowly so the CETAs are really coming into our space, and this is appreciated because the issues of quality, particularly with offering of skills, the issues of quality the skills transfer to the lecturers and so on will actually be able to take care of those. So this is also just assisting us in terms of that. Putting in place a proper advocacy plan. We have involved our chief directorate communication in the department that they workshop our colleges in terms of putting in place a proper advocacy plan, because we saw that they are lacking in that area. So they've been taking through how can they go about having communication strategies, how they brand themselves, how they can actually market themselves to the student who need to come to the sector. So we are beginning to work on having a proper advocacy plan in terms of colleges. We have seen a number of our principals also beginning to participate in the community radio stations where they actually market the community colleges, so there's some work there. The issue of academic boards, Dr. Masoro indicated to it earlier, but this is important because then the colleges will begin to take the issue of diversifying programs seriously by a structure which is located in the college, which then is also able to inform council in terms of what they can approve being the programs that are offered in the college. The second challenge is the issue of teaching and learning. Through the very same report which we must provide to honorable members, we have picked up in our monitoring that we have a challenge in terms of how time is managed, particularly by the lecturers. Time that's allocated to teaching and learning is actually an issue. We see this, there are poor lesson planning in terms of lecturers, how they present their lectures to students. The issue of attendance is also a very, very serious issue for us, because sometimes when people go to monitor, the students are low, the next thing they are high, and so on. So it's something that we are also that we have also picked up. Shortage of LTSM, which has been brought to this house before, is there, and just creating a positive learning environment in the other space so that people don't feel neglected. In terms of our approach and the progress that has been made, we are really, really strengthening our monitoring, and this we are using the officials of the department who are based in the regional offices so that they actually actively visit and monitor so that we know that teaching and learning is taken seriously out there. But the other issue that we saw as a gap was that which affects time management, the lesson planning, and so on. Our centers were not having proper timetables in place which informed them what happens when, also for the lecturers. And we have made sure that the colleges take responsibility of this function through their DP academics. That actually there are proper timetables for the centers which are done at college level, but involving the centers, and each and every center is then having a proper timetable which then assists with some of the issues. On the issue of LTSM, we have just concluded an agreement with the Department of Basic Education that they were going to give us to hand over the LTSM that they were using for carry goodies. Because that LTSM is quite good, their workbooks and so on are quite good for the basic literacy and so on. Because the project has slowed, so the material that is there, they are giving us the hard copies that are there, also the electronics so that we can reproduce going forward. So that is done. And we think also that we are going to make sure that because the funds in the colleges are so limited, we make sure that in terms of reproducing, this is actually centralized, maybe done through government printers and so on, but we are still going to engage with the colleges go on. The department has in its possession a draft material for level 3 and level 4, which was developed some time back using the experts which are in the field, the lecturers and so on. So we are going to make sure quality assure that, finalize that material and make sure that we actually provide it to the centers to use. But what we have done also, we have a national policy on LTSM, and there is also a national catalogue that we have provided to the colleges assistance with the LTSM. And in terms of the next one, the lecturer qualification demand and supply, our monitoring shows that we have three kinds of lecturers in the sector. We have lecturers that are qualified and correctly placed. We have qualified, not correctly placed, which means they are lecturers by profession, but they are teaching any subject that is available to them, not necessarily being expert in that. We also have unqualified lecturers. And this is very historic, because these lecturers, when you look at them, is lecturers who have been in the sector for a very, very, very long time. So it's not a new phenomenon, and it's something that we really must deal with and see how we change the situation. And obviously the issue of conditions of service is really playing a huge role, because we are unable to attract the lecturers that we want into the sector. And in terms of the progress, what we are doing about this, firstly, Chairperson, what we did earlier this year, we identified that there's information gap. You know, things change from ABET to IA to CET, but the lecturers were not kept on board in terms of the development, the expectation, what is it that we are trying to do. So what we did, we had the roadshows with the lecturers earlier this year in the CET sector to close the information gap for one, to just take them through what has actually changed, why are we CET, and how are they then supposed to be responding to this thing. We shared information with them. But also we wanted them to grasp the principles of CET so that they understand the nature of the student who comes, that, you know, we are about second chance, we want to restore the human dignity, we want to restore hope in communities and so on. So we took them through those roadshows as a department so that we inform them. But also we have seen that in as much as we are trying to standardize issues around lecturer's conditional service, we cannot neglect that posts cannot be filled where there are posts for lecturers. And you find that colleges are actually suffering. So we are feeling where there's necessity for a post to be filled, and we feel those posts so that lecturers are available. But there's also a policy which guides universities in terms of qualifications to be developed for CET lecturers, as I said. We are also, just to be sure who we have in the system, verification of lecturer qualifications. And for those who have applied, who have actually improved their academics and so on, they have provided us with applications so that the REQB level can be improved. We are also attending to those issues. And we also realize that there is a need for lecturers who are in the system who are qualified. We cannot neglect that there's a need for continuous professional development. So we have committed this year as part of our APP that we need to develop a lecturer development policy, and we are actually working on this. Financial management, I think Dr. Mashobo touched on this one. This is one of the challenges that we actually have. Currently, our colleges do not meet the requirements of the PFMA that they can receive their monies. So what we have done is indicated there is that contract with SAICA that means to capacitate the colleges so that they are able to have financial management system, but internal controls in the colleges. And the project focuses on building capacity around supply chain, finance, business management system, infrastructure, HR, and so on. But what's happening, because the colleges are currently running, teaching and learning is happening, and there are needs. What we have put in the interim is that they are assisted through the TVET colleges so that they are able to procure goods and services, and this includes LTSN. There are challenges that come maybe from one college and so on, but we deal with them as and when they happen per TVET college. And infrastructure, on this one, Chairperson, things have not changed. We still don't have premises for our colleges. Most of our colleges, particularly the CLCs, are operating from mainstream schools, and I must emphasize that it's primary schools, most of them. You then realize that the furniture that is a primary school is very difficult that it can actually cater for an adult person. So it's actually a challenge in that the environment is really unsuitable for adults. And of late, we are seeing threats, more and more threats of evictions that are actually given to colleges, and the hostile treatment towards our staff and so on. What we have done is that, maybe firstly before what we have done as a branch, in terms of the approved organogram, the branch, there is a dedicated section which actually is supposed to deal with infrastructure. So it is not a by the way function. There is a unit that then must look into the infrastructure needs and provide infrastructure planning, do the need assessment, so that the infrastructure slowly, there's something that's going to be done around it. But we have also actively involved our councils and college management that we need to identify unused schools and underutilized infrastructure, and there are lists that we have actually begun to receive in this case indicating. So we must then take the process forward in terms of how can we use those schools or that infrastructure for the benefit of the CET program. But the development that has happened within the department, the skills branch and the leadership branch are now working together to explore the usage of and access of skills centers for CET provision, and we are seeing progress in that one. In terms of partnership, this is where the colleges actually approach other organizations to avail infrastructure if they have for use of CET. And I can quote that in KZN, there are two tribal authorities that have recently signed an MOU with the college availing some infrastructure for usage of CET, of the CET college, so that they can access that and use that. So there are those such things that are happening. In terms of the conditions of service, I will not go into this one because I think Dr. Masogo touched on the progress that is happening. But maybe just to mention that we are, one of the things that we have noticed is that we really need to keep the lecturers out there informed in terms of the strides that we are making, because keeping quiet to them actually means that nothing is happening, they are forgotten. So engaging them and giving feedback in terms of the progress that is being made has actually helped to manage and calm the situation in a way. This is my last slide, Chairperson. The challenges in the Western Cape. I think the committee will recall that we had a dedicated meeting in 2017 where members of SAYEU wrote to the committee, and they requested an audience with the committee, and were invited to that meeting where they presented the challenges that they are facing and that they are not getting joy in getting these challenges resolved. Now, what has happened is that we have been working with the Western Cape College and the regional office in the Western Cape to actually resolve these issues. To date, since the last meeting when they were here, I can report that there are 6 meetings which were held with the SAEU so that they determine progress and see whether they are implementing the decisions that have happened. There are 6 meetings which have been held, and most of the issues that were raised before the committee have been resolved. The issue of the timetable at the CLC, it was a very thorny issue, because from there the lecturers were saying that some of them are not being allocated work, some are working more than others and all those things. And we recognized that the issue there was the absence of a proper timetable at the center. And that was done, so the issues around who's teaching when, who's got more time, was actually resolved in that sense. And the transparency on budget issues, that issue was also addressed with the CLC consent or the lecturer's consent. They were informed properly in terms of how the monies are allocated, why money is going to TVET colleges, why the center is not receiving its budget, and so on. So they were taken through those things. Those issues were clarified. The issue of standardized contracts, it was an issue that the CLC consent specifically, or some of them in the Western Cape, are actually not using the contract that is provided by the department. But the center managers are actually drafting their own contracts, putting their own terms and doing that. So we have actually made sure that they actually are using the same contract that is drafted by the department, and in terms of how they contract it in a manner that is required. The roles and responsibilities of center managers, were told that they were given powers to hire and fire and so on. So those are the issues that were addressed with the center managers, and processes, powers, authorities were actually clarified with the center managers and the lecturers' consent. The process of recruitment, selection and appointment, this is the issue around that they see people pitching up in centers, there are no adverts that are put in place, they don't know what processes are followed, and those issues were also have been actually clarified. The issue that also clarified is that they were requesting that the SAEU should be part of the council in the Western Cape, and we actually took them through the act so that they understand that the composition of a council of an institution is done through a CET Act, and what does the CET Act say, and there is no way that we can have them in the council. A lecturer representative elected following the due processes, yes, can be a member of council, but not them as a stakeholder or an organization. They cannot serve on the council. So there's been those kind of meetings that are happening to clarify these issues, progress is taken and so on, and there are minutes of these meetings that have been held with them. And on the other accusations of saying some people are working double contracts and all those things, the SAEU has been requested repeatedly to actually provide the name of the said people that they know, that this is the person who's actually been benefiting and so on. And to date, I think the college and the regional office wait for that list to be provided of names. Because acting on accusation and you don't know who you are dealing with, it's very difficult. The remaining challenge, Chairperson, is a challenge on the contract, on contract appointment and the claim system, which is being resolved through the other process of standardization of conditions of service. Mm. Thank you. I think that's the end.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I really would like that report because we have rushed through a huge amount of information and details, but we really can't get our heads around it, and the slides don't fully summarize either. So if you wouldn't mind giving up that report. However, if the numbers of students, huge numbers of these students are actually doing the trick, repeating the trick, why do we have respect in higher education? Should it not be in basic education? These are school kids. And what we're actually offering is a school repeat program, not community education and training, in effect. I'm not saying that that's the desire of the department, but that is the effect. And surely we have to really think seriously about that. We can't just brush over it. We've mentioned it before. And we're not equipped as a, or you are not equipped as a higher education department to manage schools, and you call them lecturers, but maybe they're school teachers, and all that goes along with managing schools and school teachers. It's a whole different ball from what higher education is about. So I really would, I mean, I'm so pity the DG isn't here, because, and the minister, because these are very serious issues of structure on this department that do need to be taken up. And it's perhaps not your job, really, because you're tasked with looking after the sector. But I'm asking a prior question of can one really seriously take this seriously as a higher education sector when it's actually about students?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think I would like to say I share the similar concern. But I think it's what we have been saying all along. But the issue is also that DPE no longer offers the second chance. They don't have those kinds of institutions where when you fail matric, you can still go back as an 18 or 19 year old. So I think that is the problem that we are facing, that needs engagement with both higher education and GPE. Because in the actual sense, we don't want to be to have young people who will be just left out without knowing where to go. And then I think it is understandable in that sense that we have some way, some place that is able to accommodate these young people who are left without matric and are able to proceed in that sense. But in the main, we are still saying that we must go back to the white paper. What is it saying about community education policy? Mm-hmm. So that is the main thing. Not to say that we don't really want what you are offering because it's assistance to our young people. For me, really, because I have experience, I know those that have managed to pass through your program and then now are in university. I understand the benefits. But we are also saying that go back and understand what is it that the CET is meant to offer. It goes back to the question, to the challenge that Honorable Bozoli was saying, that you don't have what is required. Because in your challenges, where they are speaking to the teaching and learning, something will say poor lesson planning, your preparations, your presentation, there are subject advisors in DPD. It means that you should have collaboration with those with that department so that they can come and oversee and monitor what is happening, so that we can be assisted. I think as much as we understand, but you must have collaboration, work with the Department of Education so that they can offer assistance in this learning center. So that was my take. And I would like to know whether has there been any engagement with PPE on infrastructure, especially the utilization of schools. Again, we cannot shy away from the fact that there are people who work twice. Mm. Remember that we've got a high level of unemployment.
Mm.
If it's like that, we've got these unemployed graduates, what about upskilling them? Enable them to do those post-graduate certificates of education so that they are able to fit in your system. So that is another way, because that's why people are complaining, because it's not assisting in relation to providing employment. It's us who are working, who are teachers, who are also benefiting from your system. So you must have a way of review your personnel, how you employ, prioritize those that are unemployed with graduate, with degrees, upskill, ensure that they get necessary skills in order to be able to teach our young people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I have got two questions. One is that the presenter spoke about the loan-saving nature. My question, therefore, is as and when you assess what is the level of the quality of the output? Because one might be there in the system for a long time only to find that he or she falls within those who are unable to plan their lessons. The second one is about the temporary lecturers. And I want to check if you want to assess their performance. How do they perform as temporary lecturers? And if they perform, what is your plan with regard to those temporary lecturers? Because I just assume that they are temporary because they are unqualified. That is my assumption. Because in most cases, there are those teachers who are unqualified, who do not have certificates, but still offering the teaching service.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm also of the opinion that the community-based colleges should be left open because it hasn't yet developed to its best capacity. Indeed, it is concentrating on retaining students who are failed and they are creating to get matric. But it is implicit, I think, in the white paper, the intention of the curriculum, which I think, and this is a question I want to ask, that are we able to start developing the curriculum further than what it is offering now? For example, the issue of cooperatives, all these other women who want to do creative production, that are there in our communities, one somewhere where they can be taught, actually because it is collapsing, simply because they don't know how to run a cooperative. So that is just one example, but also past experience of some artisans, they can be accommodated there and upgraded. Things that you spoke about, and I said that they get their qualification. So all these others, because it is good for others to return after they experience life, and it is said that when they return and get upgraded, because they know how hard life is without qualification, they were very hard, and they become successful. So that nobody should lose an opportunity, whether late in life, if you want to upgrade, there must be an institutional structure where you can go to and get upgraded. And others have to say that, because when they have children to take care of and all these life experiences, they don't play when they get the opportunity. They really work hard and become successful. But that point that it opens up opportunities for any person in South Africa who, whether at a later stage, want to go back and improve himself, at least the education system and the skill system can offer that opportunity for him to operate. And I think we should start looking at that and creating in our curriculum means and ways of accommodating that avenue.
Okay. I take it, you know, the third question that we are asking again. And the last time we asked you, to really address the following aspects, which in the main are three issues. The one obviously is the funding issue. And then the second one we said to you is the governance issue. If you listen to the last part of the report, you can really see you are not getting anything right in the Western state, or they are not getting themselves right. And we attempted to go and do oversight in the Western case, but we couldn't. We're all at night, and I'm going to go from the site 10 o'clock at night. We don't get overtime. I'm saying that the majority of them, except for work, and then two or three of them function during the day. The rest are all at night, so we're just never ever going to be able to do oversight over them, because we're not going to do oversight in the government in El Salvador. So we then said, do we have the proper governance issues in place? There's a lot of problems centered around the fact that we don't seem to be having the proper infrastructure in place. And added to infrastructure, the majority of them, as you say, are at, you know, they're squatting there and squatting there and so on. And of course, none of that is going to work. What we're going to hear you say is that you've had a conversation with Public Works, for example, and Public Works are saying that there's a number of schools that the Western State government wants to close down. Are you there to have a discussion with them on providing access to these colleges, to these schools that are going vacant? I mean, it's really terrible that it's not going to be a workplace to operate. We should blame us, I think. The place has been vandalized. The gangsters have moved into the place as opposed to the place we use for a purpose like this. And so I can continue with other vacant buildings that are around. So we don't hear you saying that this is a conversation that you've had with the public works, for example, or obviously their own office. But we also said that the law says that to be fair to yourself, you're really 4 years old or 3.5 years old. So a lot of the things that we are expecting, I think it's a little bit unfair to think that all of them would have been realized now in the 3.5 years that this policy has been established. So what we like with the accent is that the minister has the right to do all of these pilots. And then the minister has the right to then say that they need them to roll out much further. So help us with the understanding of if that's still where you are, or are you at the process of just taking everything lock, stock and barrel and just carrying on. Because obviously it's not going to work in that. You cannot compare yourself in the way that the civic colleges came to national. These colleges have come to national. It's not the same. We can't expect the same thing because the one lot came with fair infrastructure, lots of different policies and lots of all sorts of other problems that we are still experiencing in the public colleges. But here we're really coming with something that has been around but not quite. So when we change the act from ABIT to CET, I think it's that thing that we want to. We must give up on this. It would be wrong to just give up and say, let them go out there. And maybe what you must, I think, explain to the House again is the intention of what the Act is saying and what it is, I think Honourable Kekana asked part of it already, what it is that are supposed to be produced. Because when you hear matriculants, and everyone says, go to basic. But the truth is, it's not matriculants only that you're dealing with. The Act says there's a range of different things. You are supposed to be dealing with a need. And the program on the NEET is not coming through sufficiently. You're supposed to be part of the continued learning process in what it is that you are capturing these particular group of young people in the main that are supposed to be provided a range of different things as the Act spells out clearly. So I don't think it's a shortcut, just go to basic education. I think when I tell you the intention of what the Act said, why it is there, and then how are you moving towards making sure that those things actually can be achieved. The problem is, because we have challenges all the time, and then, when you have 5 pages of challenges, and 5 slides of challenges, and 1 page of... So obviously everyone works through the challenges. And I think what we want to hear is, even if it's one district, we're supposed to be forming districts together into districts. So give us a sense of, these are the things that we have been able to achieve in the particular district or two or three or four, as opposed to the continuation of these are the areas that we are still struggling with. And I do want to say again, because your other colleagues are here, what support are you getting from the skills branch? What support are you getting from the pivot branch? Where is university? All you're giving, because if you want to start something and if there's no one else around you, you're not going to get anywhere. There is a bigger higher education and training with infrastructure. So I'm not testing you on whether your colleagues are sitting, I'm not asking that. I'm just saying the best place to start is obviously at home and see internally what are the kind of skill internally can be assisted. Because I know there are good stories around this one. The good stories are here. So it comes to sufficiency as opposed to these are the challenges. I accept we have asked you, can you speak to some of the things you spoke about the last time? see the depressing story all the time. Because we know that there are hundreds of things that have happened in this area. So at this point in time, it is 10 after 1. And shall we, honorable members, give them 8 minutes to answer? And then we can break.
Honourable members, the policy position of government in the White Paper and also in the NDP is that these institutions are part of the post-school education and training system. The position of the White Paper is, please change these centers from being purely academic finishing school to skill the communities. And in those programs, there may be also programs which are of value to community, which for which may not require a certificate. And that is the strategic handle we are pursuing. How do we want to get there? We have identified 52 centers whose capacity we must evaluate and build so that we use them as test ground while we are holding the other system together. Well, because we agree it can't be everywhere and in any center. And also, how do we get there in the centers that we have identified? We would like to have them differentiated in terms of program offering in relation to the economy in the district and communities where they are, so that they don't offer one and the same thing across the country. That's basically our approach. Chair, we have quite a number of these centers which already are operating in this fashion. But what we have to deal with as well is that we have to, the current cohort of lecturers, we have to subject them to reskilling themselves in order to be able to offer the, you can't just fire them, you have to reskill them so that they are able to offer the new types of programs. And that's the direction which we are taking, retraining the current cohort of lecturers. With regard to infrastructure, the engagement, we have presented this matter, Chair and Honourable Members, to the heads of education departments, where the head comm structure. We have presented our infrastructure dilemma, and we got a list of schools from Gauteng. We've got a list of schools from the Eastern Cape Department. We've got a list of schools from here. Now, you hand over these to the management and the governance structure of the college. Please then engage so that you are able to take over the operations of this inquiry. Just also to note, Chair, some of the infrastructure we are getting, in actual fact, is something which, if we are not careful, is going to kill us. Because it is so far away from anybody else that you will need to bus people there. And that's the kind of infrastructure we are not keen to take over, because we do not want another further demand of, please give us funding for transport. We would like to locate these centers as far as possible within communities. So, Chair, I think the progress which we must keep presenting to the portfolio committee at frequent at certain intervals is how far are we going with regard to the piloting institutions. What is happening there, what evidence is taking us forward in relation to the strategic direction of the white paper and the NDP. You see, the CET Act, you don't have to change it, you can work within it, but work creatively within it by focusing on building capacity and strategic directions of your managers in institutions and your governance structures. Your governance structure as an institution. I think that's the direction we want to take. However, Chief, each time I leave you here, I'll leave you with this is what we are doing, but these are the challenges, and this is what we are doing about them. And I actually don't want to go to specific questions because the questions of performance assessment, for instance, it's a condition of service issue which has never been part of this system when we inherited it. And in this system, there is no performance management regime. If you want to subject them to that, please take that as part of the changes in their conditions of service and say, we are going to performance manage you in this particular way. And in other words, this is one of our items which when we negotiate, we have to negotiate to introduce it because you can't have employees who are perpetually contracted but their performance is not assessed. Mm-hmm. The point, whether temporary or long-term, in the sector there has been absolutely no performance management system. So I can't vouch for quality because all I see at the end of the year, particularly in the academic program, is the downward spiral in terms of certification. And now, that may not necessarily be the problem of the fact that people are not qualified. It may be a people of a laissez-faire culture in the centers, because if you are not managing as a center manager, if you are not managing as a principal, and if you are managing as a principal 700 centers, it's just not going to work. I agree with you. We are working on proposals of reducing the centers to a manageable number. Even if we don't get funding to establish new colleges, but we may have to reduce the centers to a number that is manageable and efficient. And those are the proposals that we have in our head, at least to give the system some kind of an identity. At the moment, it's an amorphous thing which you grab this side and you can't get hold of it. But we have a plan. We are working on a plan to change it.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. Well, I must say, Chairperson, that there is work that is taking place within the CET environment. And quite very soon we are going to see some results. We all understand the challenge, especially if we speak of those who are not in employment, education or training, that number continues, whether you look into first quarter, second quarter of 2018, to grow up. So it means, therefore, that our interventions must speak especially to those areas, whether we look into those who have not completed as yet grade 12. That number, we know, is quite very huge. I just want to make one example, Chairperson. Yesterday, we were in Northwest in the area called Madidi. So it's also a CET, a center there. The work that is being done in that particular area and the interest that has aroused around the community with the work that is done by that center there, especially in the area of it's a clothing, you can call it it's a garment construction beadwork, and we're also shown even uniforms that they are also manufacturing or producing uniforms for the communities that are surrounding that particular area. And computer as well, computer lab, I was speaking for example MICT Theater, because you mentioned the point that collaborations are going to be quite very important, because a CET sector is not going to be having that much amount of money, as you know that there is no money that is really available. So meaning is therefore collaborations, partnerships are going to be key in this process. Then the acting CEO of MICT Theater was saying to me already we have assisted this center with regard to accreditation. Was saying also that those programs that are being offered there must be programs of quality. They must be quality assured as well. FPNM CETA also came quite very handy, saying they are going to contribute, assist, especially with regard to beadwork as well as garment construction. So they'll be working very closely with that particular center. We can mention the list, Chairperson, and also, but then the list is still like very, very, it's very low. It's not having like a lot of examples, but then at least we can say there is work that is being done, and with the revenue, if we're to have it, as we think we can do a lot within the city centers. I'll mention another one at Indale in Richmond, whereby it is very much also involved in garment construction, also in shoe manufacturing. We're also surprised to see the shoes that are being manufactured there that you might not get maybe even in big shops in the country, you know, Edgar's and others. So it tells us if we're investing more money, Chairperson, in the city sector, we're going to really have more impact, but then it might take us some time. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
All right.
Honourable members, I really don't
don't want to push your strength and your energy level, but I want to find out if it's a short report, come and just finish it.
Mm.
And if we're done for the day.
Mm.
Mm.
We need to simplify.
It also says that our systems are too bureaucratic and we need to improve the way we deliver our services. And it, in the end, highlights the need for government to ensure a good balance between competing imperatives. Like, on the one hand, we need to provide high-level skills to keep the global competitiveness and respond to our economy, and on the other hand, we need to respond to intermediate skills and basic skills. So to keep that balance, and it's asking Parliament to make sure that when we do the budgeting, we need to ensure this balance is correct. That what I call the Goldilocks state, not too hot, not too cold, medium, in terms of balancing between the supply to the economy, high, medium, and basic skills. We can't have it extreme on all sides. So the Goldilocks state of how we plan, how we budget is important, and that is a bit of a challenge because we don't have a way of doing that here yet. Then the other thing that's important, Chair, is the issue of having a vocational education pathway for basic education, for the schooling system. We agree with that, we are working with the department on that, but we believe that we do need a high-level panel of experts to guide this process because right now it requires that guide. Now this is a very big policy statement, a very big policy shift to have this vocational stream in higher education. It's very important. But we definitely need this grouping of experts to guide our work on this matter. And the rest of the chair is all what we are doing, improving our curriculum, making it more responsive, making sure our system is more responsive to the needs of the economy. A lot of everything that is here is in the white paper. Even the issue of simplification, it's been in the white paper and reflects in relation to the NQF. And we've done an evaluation of the NQF and we've got some proposals. So a lot of it is already there, and we can give you a bit more of a detailed report if we require it and to give us a time frame. But this is a very, very initial discussion. Thank you very much.
Question?
When you say vocational, we need vocational, the recommendation is that out of the 14, we need vocational, which will provide itself in higher education. Isn't it itself as what is offered by teachers? So how do we deal with this? What is it?
Anyone else?
Chair, I appreciate the presentation. Mine is not a question, just a comment. Chair, just to say, with this good eye panel recommendation, if we can implement what is recommended, I think we will move from a point to another. Because like you are saying, most of the things that is written there, they are in a white paper. But why are we not implementing? Maybe the strategy on how to implement will go with the input that you say we need high experts to guide this system of this system. I think that is my comment.
Chair, I'd like to make
know
how much the high-level panel actually costs, because it seems to me it is reinventing the wheel. The department knows almost all of these points, and those of it disagrees with it seems to be perfectly sensible, like don't go for lower level qualifications, we need a high-level skill economy. And it reminds me of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, which came to us, gave us a presentation on work that it must have cost millions to set up that department. The work they did was almost identical to the work that the department has been presenting to us for the last 4 years. So it too reinvented the wheel. So we seem to have a government that keeps trying to evaluate itself badly or unnecessarily. And I really would like to know more about this high-level panel. Who was on it and how much it cost and how many hours it was, etc. Because it seems to be wasteful expenditure.
So I'm going to the department for answer that on the book of somebody in the front. I'm sure your chief will put in the question to the speaker, because it was the speaker that initiated this, the speaker and the NCLC chair that initiated this exercise. I don't think it's a bad exercise, because it's supposed to be Parliament. The emphasis is not on them, the emphasis is on us. And the emphasis is supposed to be what are people saying about us as Parliament responding to the following issue on education. And have we made any amends to the aspirations of the people out there? So we're asking the department, what do you say about recommendations that are in there? And so we're happy that you've done some work on it and you have some responses on it. Now, a quick glance at the initial stage when they sent the department is one that says that we've gone a long way on all of these issues already. They were not absolutely new things that were given to us. But I take it on the moment that we will grant the department that request of putting together a more detailed one and then send it to us by the beginning of September or so. And that honourable members, I think you would agree with me, we're not necessarily going to have further public hearings on this. I don't think there is any, if you want to mull over and think about, you know, what further we need to do with it, then I think that will be welcome. But let's get that other information from the department. And then we can see from there. We might ask other people in the higher education family if they want to say something about it also. We can do that, give it to them, and they will also know, put together some responses. But having said that, Honourable Member, we think it's a great pleasure to end this meeting here and now and invite you to have some, for example, lunch somewhere in the evening. I think I really have lunch for the week and then something there. And then everyone else can join in, and I hope there's enough for everyone. Honourable members, on that note, thank you very much to the department, for the members, and everyone out there. We're going to come to the end.